Let's talk a little bit about in general right now. I want to ask a question. Your favorite, in general, we'll start with this, is your favorite horror films of the year that you had this past year? If you had to give a recommendation for some good horror.
Well, I think you and I share this one, Nick. The movie of 2019, the horror movie of 2019, there's only one for me. It's Mike Flanagan's Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, I'm a big fan myself of Dr. Sleep. I know we've talked about this before, but tell me, why do you like Dr. Sleep so much?
Well, it's a sequel to, you know, obviously Stephen King's book of The Shining. And it's also a sequel to Stanley Kubrick's adaptation of The Shining from the 80s. And somehow Mike Flanagan manages to bridge the gap from adaptation of Stephen King's books, both The Shining and Dr. Sleep, as well as bringing in all the iconography from Kubrick's adaptation. And it's hard to describe why I loved it so much, but I just knew while I was watching it that I was like, is this like some kind of masterstroke from Mike Flanagan? You know, I just, it felt super mature to me. And I felt like the movie never really thought the audience was intelligent. And that's a big part of it. You know, it didn't pander to the audience. It was a very adult, mature, film. And it contained one of the most brutal movie scenes that I've seen in a movie with the baseball boy. I'll just leave it at that.
I was describing that to a coworker, and I was like, I felt like it was at this line and was teetering on what should be allowed in film and what should not be while I was watching it. But it's I think the only time this year where I ever turned my face away from the screen at a moment.
It was very difficult. And as you know, I watch a lot of horror movies all the time, and I was surprised that they managed to get away with that. It goes on, you know, very brutal scene. But it also contains some of the most beautiful stuff that I've seen in a movie from 2019. There's a scene when some of the characters start to float off into the sky and the sort of camera turns and it looks like they're, parallel to the earth. And, you know, it's just a beautiful sequence. And I couldn't believe just the big ideas the movie had. The performances are incredible. The actress who played Rose the Hat, she's a great, great villain. Ewan McGregor is fantastic as grown-up Danny Torrance. And the young girl who played Abra was really fantastic as well. And I loved going back to the Overlook, of course. It was just something super satisfying about it. It was a story I was genuinely interested in. Just incredible, incredible movie. It's a shame that it didn't do well at the box office. And I don't know why it didn't, of course, but I feel like it's a movie that's just going to grow and grow and grow in esteem as years pass and more horror fans get to see it, you know?
You get a few movies every year that don't do as well at the box office that should. Blade Runner 2049 is a movie that is considered some people better than the original that didn't make enough money at the box office. And Dr. Sleep, I think, falls in that kind of same category this year.
You know, and I don't want to interrupt, but that is one of the comparisons I've been making is between Dr. Sleep and Blade Runner 2049. They're very similar in what they do, how they honor and pay homage to their original films, but they also create a new world with a unique vision of their own. And when I saw Blade Runner 2049 for the first time, I was just blown away. It's just the cinematography, the design is just just incredible. And I feel like, like you said, that's definitely going to be a movie that time will favor. And I think the same thing for Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, and I look forward to rewatching it. You mentioned there's a director's cut coming out, too, on the Blu-ray.
Yeah, the Blu-ray comes out early February, and there's going to be not only the theatrical cut of the film included, but a almost 3-hour director's cut that I had no idea was coming, you know, and so total surprise that blew me away. And I'm currently reading The Shining, the book, and I'm hoping to finish that soon and to read Dr. Sleep, you know, the novel, I mean, so I could be prepared to watch the movie again, you know, and especially the director's cut. So really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and one of the things, and this is the last thing I'll say about Dr. Sleep that I really enjoyed about it, was it had its own identity. I mean, this is one of the most famous movies in The Shining of all time. Kubrick's masterpiece, people call it. And it feels like it's its own thing also paying homage to Kubrick. I think that's incredible.
And I, if I may add one last thing, I feel like Kubrick's film is an incredible masterpiece. It's a colder film. You know, it's Kubrick isn't, you know, all about aesthetics, and it is a very just gorgeously shot movie. But it's cold. You know, you don't get much in terms of, in my opinion, at least like character development or things like that.
Jack Nicholson's character is very—I mean, it's one of Stephen King's criticisms is he's too unlikable, and it's understandable. Yeah. It feels like a chore watching his character at times.
Well, and he plays it to 11 almost the whole time, you know. But I feel, on the other hand, that Dr. Sleep is very warm. It's very loving to its characters. We get to spend time with them. We get to know them. We get to see their interactions. And I think that is why it feels so faithful to King, because King is like that with his characters in his novels. And so it felt like a very faithful adaptation to the world of Stephen King, you know, and... versus the Kubrick coldness, you know?
Yeah, thematically, with that, it also counterbalances things, because a lot of the themes in this movie and the motifs that are used are so dark.
Very dark, very dark.
So, grappling with death, never an easy thing, and that's a major prominent thing in the film. Yeah. So, kind of having a little bit of relief and liking some of your protagonists, your characters, your followers, it isn't a bad thing. So,
I love the I loved how they chose not to do... like CGI or like de-aging to bring back some of the actors who played those iconic characters from the Kubrick film. Like, they got a brand new actress who's from a fantastic horror film called Starry Eyes. In Dr. Sleep, she plays the Wendy Torrance character, you know, and she does the voice so well. What's the actress's name from the original Shining?
I don't have it off the top of my head,
but
I'm an idiot.
But she does her voice just incredibly well, and it made me smile the whole time I was watching the movie. And the same thing with Jack Nicholson's character. I mean, there were some brave choices made, and I think very well done. Because I think sometimes CGI or de-aging, it won't look so good in 5 to 10 years, you know. So I think it's great that they got real actors to reprise those characters, you know.
Yeah, I thought it went really well. Is there any other media that you wanted to mention this year? It doesn't even have to be a movie, but as far as horror is concerned.
Well, I do. I have a kind of a short list of movies. I'll just go through them real quick. I really enjoyed It Chapter 2, another Stephen King adaptation. But another highlight of the year for me was the movie Midsommar, Ari Aster's film. That's a fantastic film. Jordan Peele's Us. I mean, I'd be remiss not to mention, you know, Jordan Peele's Us if we're talking about 2019 horror. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Really enjoyed that one. PG-13 horror.
That was my second favorite horror film of the year. As much as I love Us, and I really liked Us, Scary Stories did stuff that I just did not expect to like. It was able to tell these kind of episodic tales in a coherent manner that just felt fun going from beat to beat to beat. And I was surprisingly engaged.
Me too. Yeah. And it really put me in the mood for October too. It just was like the perfect seasonal movie, you know. And they managed to get away with a lot too for a PG-13 rating. You know, that the scene with the pimple and the spiders coming out, it was really just had me cringing in my seat just because, you know.
Film's graphic representation, especially it has one of my favorite shot scenes period from 2019, and that's the red siren scene.
The pale lady.
I mean, you're talking about how that was shot. Outside of Uncut Gems, I think the most I felt anxiety and suspense was probably the way they shot that scene, because it literally feels like the walls are closing in.
It really does,
and they shoot it perfectly to do it. I think it's one of the films where we talk about there's so much well-shot horror this past year. Mm-hmm. I think from a directing standpoint, Scary Stories in the Dark, I really hope, doesn't get forgotten about because it's less of that rated R kind of genre, but it's a really accessible horror film on top of it just being a really good film.
Mm-hmm. Produced by Guillermo del Toro and directed by, director's name is Andre Overdahl. He's directed a movie called The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which is phenomenal. And then he did a film called Troll Hunter before that. So this dude, really look keeping my eye out on. He's next thing he's doing, he's adapting a Stephen King novel called The Long Walk Home. So he'll be directing that. And that, I mean, he's got the potential to do some really great things. So quickly, I really liked Ready or Not, which is another horror film from 2019. Reminded me a lot of one of my favorite films, horror films of the 2010s, a movie called You're Next. Ready or Not and You're Next make a great double feature. And then some lesser known ones, I wouldn't 100% call it horror, but it's definitely science fiction with some horror elements, is a movie called High Life. Directed by the French director Claire Denis. That one stars Robert Pattinson, who, you know, was in another great horror movie from 2019, The Lighthouse. And then that one, I don't know if anyone saw that, but it's really fantastic sci-fi horror film that I really enjoyed. And then this little, like, stalker thriller film called Greta was fantastic, starring the famous actress Isabelle Huppert, the French actress. That was really cool. Just a nice, like, classic, lean, stalker, creepy thriller that I really enjoyed. Yeah, that was pretty much 2019 for me. Yeah.
Anything that you are looking forward to in 2020?
Let me see. Well, I one of the things I am looking forward to, and I got to already watch actually a couple episodes, is on HBO there is a 10-part miniseries based on Stephen King's novel The Outsider. A friend of mine let me use their HBO Go, and so the first two episodes are streaming from there, and it's a really incredible adaptation of this super dark police procedural story that goes full King by the end of it. But right now it's feeling like True Detective. Very dark, direct, you know, it almost feels like it could be a David Fincher thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that turns out. And I'm also very much looking forward to the remake of Candyman coming out supposedly this year, produced by Jordan Peele and directed by a woman named Nia DaCosta, I believe. So that is definitely one on my radar. There is a movie coming out called VFW that I'm looking forward to. It's about so it stars all these classic genre actors, and they play veterans hanging out at a VFW hall, and they have to fight off these like mutant punk guys. You know, it's like a siege film, so I'm definitely that's on my radar. But yeah, I'm looking forward to more issues of Fangoria magazine and just living and breathing horror, you know, reading more, listening to more horror podcasts and seeing whatever comes out, you know, that I can.
Peter, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Nick. Thanks for having me.